Hey, everybody, this is Dave. Welcome back to the All Independent Renal Podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to ask if you could all subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast feed and leave us a rating or a comment about the show. It would be greatly appreciated. So anyways, let's get on with the show.
Paint a picture, wisdom ran like scripture. A mixture of images, I'm the descriptor. Young prodigy, standing smack in his picture. Predictor of the future with the flow that I kick ya. Through known to kick flows for old souls. Heard he had the goal of taking up on a lead role. Untold what the future will hold. A million dollar baby swinging fortune favors the fold. Chase the scene, fur coats and limousines. More shine.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the All Independent Renal Podcast. My name's Dave, and this episode is with Frank Friday. I had a good conversation with him a couple weeks ago in the garage. It's freezing cold outside. He drove through the ice in the snow and hung out in my garage for a little bit talking about his music and how he got started. He's a local hip-hop artist from Reno, and he's been making music since about 2012 or so as Frank Friday. He started out in the band Bazooka Zoo and has collaborated with producer T. Hayes, amongst other people. But he played a lot of shows around Reno. He's since moved to New York and pursuing his career and his passion, still writing and still doing a bunch of other things too. He's a really smart guy, and we had a lot of fun talking about how he came into his or how he got his name because of his fandom for comics, Marvel Comics and whatnot, and his life experiences that brought him here in the first place, growing up in Boulder City, Nevada. So you'll get to hear all that stuff coming up in this episode. So here's the episode in my conversation with Frank Friday.
Thought you had me pegged, tried to leave me for dead, and now my presence is ubiquitous, I'm up in your head. I think it's time that you fled, your flies out, warm up in your mouth. But the big respect to Frank when you walk in my house. Truly, I would be happy without these Judas Brutus type of brothers trying to stuff all that out. Hit me right out, when I hide the rock like right out. Every day they couldn't see me like a book inside out. So beware if you dare to be rather what man flows. I swear I'm about to put the stand in these assholes. The man chose, catch a dude strutting the bad pose. You on another level, he the rap of a castle. Yep.
Cool. Well, I got Frank here in the studio garage space. Thank you very much, Frank Friday, for coming down and talking to me on the podcast. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so first thing I want to talk about is how you first started out. From what I researched, the first releases that you had were around like 2012 or so. Is that right?
Yeah. So those were my first solo releases, which were kind of I wouldn't say contrived, but totally random. Before that, though, I actually was one of the original band members in Bazooka Zoo, which is another local outfit that kind of happened in Reno, Nevada. And I contributed vocals for a while and I was singing, and then they started to make a little bit more ambitious records, and I had started freestyling at the time, and Zach Haley, who is the front man of that band, was like, hey, I think that you might have an actual talent for rap. I don't know if he actually like really knew or felt that or not, but yeah. I decided to really go for it, and he was like, so drop some verses. In hindsight, I don't love those verses, and there's a lot of stuff that I can do now that I felt I couldn't do back then. Mm-hmm. But he gave me that initial push. And then in 2012, I left the band and kind of figured, I want to write a lot more of my own material, all of my own material, in fact. And I wanted to give myself a chance to start branching out more into a more of a trailblazing like form of hip hop, because I had been watching the industry for a while and watching some things happen. And I thought there is room to be radical here, even though, I mean, in my own conception of hip hop, just by virtue of participating, it's a radical act. But even within that radical space, there's something more you can do.
Cool. Well, so when you were first getting involved with Bazooka Zoo, were you thinking that you would eventually be going in the direction of hip hop? Were you kind of like pushed by Zach in a sense to do your own stuff?
Well, no. Okay, so this is the thing, is that I didn't even think about myself as making music at all.
You're just never, being up like a part of a band.
Yeah, exactly. I just kind of got roped into being a part of a band because he was a good friend of mine. We grew up together, actually.
In Reno.
And we actually grew up in a small town called Boulder City, Nevada.
Okay.
It's 21 miles away from Las Vegas. It was a really, really tight-knit community. I think we became friends maybe late in middle school or high school or something like that. And he ended up coming to UNR a year after I did. Although, full disclosure, he and I are the same age. I graduated early from high school and was like kind of like too young to be here. And it was really weird by myself.
Okay.
And then when he and like his generation of people kind of came up here, it was like, all right, finally I have like people I can relate to who like get. Yeah. Like, you know,
well, I think the guys from Surf Curse are from Boulder City too, or from that area.
I think they're from Las. I mean, you know, I'm not totally sure. I think that they're at least from Las Vegas, but yeah, there are a lot of people from here that are talented that are from Las Vegas that really found their voices here, in my opinion, which I think is super cool.
Oh yeah, well, there's a lot of all ages places that are more accessible nowadays. Well, at least the Holland Project, as far as I know, but
yeah,
other places too.
Yeah, and you know, I think that actually has a profound impact on the creativity that people do or do not express. You know, like I said, I had never really envisioned myself as somebody who was making music or doing much of anything creative at all. I always thought I would be a reporter someday.
Yeah. Is that what you went to school for?
So I was studying journalism for a while and studying creative nonfiction at the University of Nevada. So that was like my big focus. And I did do some reporting. I used to be the editor at Insight Magazine at the University of Nevada as well.
Okay.
And then I went on to do some freelance reporting, but I moved into public relations, advertising, etc., and also moved away from nonfiction in general and started writing poetry and fiction and things like that. Okay. Just really trying to flex that creative muscle.
So in writing, doing creative writing and poetry, did that also like have influence on your hip hop writing, or was that kind of just a separate entity?
Well, I think that it is all interrelated. You know, I think that, so something I've been thinking about a lot recently, just as somebody who's concerned about it, is this idea of there being so many different forms of literacy. And I think that writing poetry is a form. There is a form of literacy there. There's a form of literacy in writing nonfiction. There's a form of literacy in the way that you and I are speaking right now. And there's a form of literacy in hip hop. And so that, in that sense, they were related. But at the same time, those forms of expression, for me at least, were tapping into different parts of who I am and really, I don't know, magnifying them or exploring them, mining them for like their individual value. So for hip hop, it's like, I don't consider like it like an alter ego or anything like that, but it is a part of my nature that I try to compartmentalize a little bit and really practice radical focus in that. And so to that end, my nonfiction writing, my fiction writing, and my poetry is much different from the way that I write hip hop. Although not always, I do have some songs that are very confessional, which is kind of the slant that my poetry takes.
Okay.
And in that sense, a lot of my confessional poetry ends up becoming songs. But other than that, I try to keep things somewhat separate.
Right. And I think a lot of, I mean, I always associate poetry and hip hop as having like a similar cadence. And I mean, if you think of like poetry slams or like, or just, you know, the cadence of a hip hop song, they're very similar in nature. So what did you grow up with? Like, what kind of music did you grow up listening to, like hip hop or otherwise, that influenced you?
I grew up,
'cause you're about what, 20?
I'm 25. Okay. And I feel funny about that because I always tell people that I'm like 23. I'm just kidding. That's a lie. But
don't lie about your age, man.
Yeah, no, there's no point in doing that. Don't lie about your age or anything else ever. But anyway, so growing up, I listened primarily to, well, there were kind of different phases. for a lot of my life, it was primarily like instrumental and like classical music. I listened to a lot of stuff from video games, just video game music straight up.
Oh, yeah. Like Final Fantasy.
Yeah. Final
Fantasy. Nobuo Uematsu stuff.
Yes. And, a lot of his stuff. Who else? Just random things. A lot of stuff from Sonic the Hedgehog, stuff from Phantasy Star Online, just various things like that where I was like,
I grew up with that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
so crazy. And like, I was super into it. Like, and, and then besides that, I was very, very invested in listening to just trailblazing female lyricists. So I was super into like Tori Amos and Bjork, very much into Bjork growing up. And let me think about who else. Lauryn Hill, of course. And there was not too much of a presence of hip hop in my life, but there was just enough. Like Goapale, I remember my mom would always listen to this song called Closer to My Dreams, which I still hear to this day. And I'm like, this is very beautiful. Like, this is just really...
I haven't heard that before. I'll
yeah, I think it's really worth... I think it's really worth tapping into. In high school, things started to shift for me a little bit. I still was not listening to very much hip hop at all, but I was listening to a ton of Amy Winehouse and a ton of Bjork, even more, like just leaning into all that. Amy Winehouse was really big for me and was like a big influence in the confessional poetry that I started to write.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that movie about her life?
I haven't seen it yet because it's going to be tough for me, and I know it because I know a lot about her life just on my own. And
like, it's just so sad to watch, even though there's a lot of like good parts in it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And what I think about Amy Winehouse very, very much impacted my understanding of how to write songs and how to tap into parts of your life in the way that you feel in a way that is very honest and wry. Like, you know, in my own songwriting, there is a certain just very fresh, like raw anger and like pain to it, I think. And a part of that comes from what I came to understand from Amy Winehouse, where it's like, you know, sometimes the best way to, and I'm going to quote a professor that I had at St. John's, she says, you channel your evil into your good. And so when things hurt you, I always thought, let me take whatever tragedy or pain that I'm going through and figure out how to turn it into something that is dynamic and powerful and like makes people want to move.
Mm. So a lot of your life experiences helped influence some of your music. What were some of the things that you went through that translated through your music?
Well, so this is tough. I've never really talked about this kind of stuff too much. So I'll just be honest.
You don't have to.
No, but, I will, because I feel like I'm actually experiencing a very interesting moment in my life right now. So let me think. Very recently, I actually came in contact with an aunt of mine who's been kind of like letting me know a lot about like various dynamics in my family and our history, things that I was totally unaware of, which that's like kind of separate, but it made me realize the context of a lot of what I've been through. But growing up, things were very challenging for me. I lived in very, I don't think the right word is violent, although there was violence in my household, but there was a lot of anger, so much anger and hurt and betrayal. And my mother and father had a very, very destructive relationship. And it did not end between them well. And that really messed with me a lot. My mother had so much rage, rightfully so, when I learned all the things that she went through. My father, I'd learned recently that he had his own traumas. His father actually, when he was in his late 40s, just suddenly died on Christmas Day from heart failure, just randomly. And he was in good health and everything otherwise. And that influenced the way that my father grew up. And that kind of trauma, you know, it's intergenerational. That kind of stuff passes on, and it keeps passing on in your family until you learn how to work it out.
You imprint that on your
and so that played into my music. And there's definitely a sense of competition and like loss in my life. So another thing that has always really influenced my music is this sense of like radical self-reliance and this ability to face so many challenges and just be willing to fight, but in a way that is not destructive. It's never about burning everything down. It's not fuck everyone. It's nothing like that.
Not a scorched earth kind of concept.
It's about like, I am here to kick ass and I'm going to beat the hell out of all of you people. But at the end of the day, it's going to be better. And so a big part of what another big part of what influenced that is growing up in Boulder City. And I know that people who hear this that are from there are going to be a little mad, but whatever. Hey, guys, I still like you a lot. But yeah. But I was one of very, very few people of color that lived in that community in general. And as a result, maybe not because people meant to be, but you go through a lot of racism. You go through a lot of bullying. I am also a queer individual. So it's like I got to pile that on top of everything.
Yeah, you have a lot of minorities. Yeah. Not minority, but you have a lot of. Yeah, that's a lot to deal with. Yeah. Shit, especially around there.
Yeah. And so for me, my whole life has always been inventing ways for me to toughen the fuck up and get through it. And so that informs my music. And then another element that influences my music a lot that I never really realized it until somebody said it to me was that it's the sense of loss and trying to make sense of loss. And when I was, I think 8 years old, my family's house burned down and we lost everything.
Holy shit.
And like everything. We were living in a motel for a few weeks. And at the time, it like, you know, it doesn't really imprint on you when you're a child. But right. As I got older, I realized that I live my life in this way where I'm like, I don't need anything. Nothing needs to hold on to me. Like I can get by on like the most bare bones thing.
Not having to have a bunch of crap and stuff, exactly. Material possessions.
Exactly. And it's like at the end of the day, I was always like, you know what? I can always rely on myself. Always.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
I can relate to that a lot. I lived through, I was living in Mississippi when Hurricane Katrina came through.
Oh, wow.
And the South Mississippi coast. And so, yeah, we lost our house and everything too. And I get that concept of you just like living with what you have.
Yeah.
And that's it. And not just being all like the 80s generation. They grew up like materialistic and buying the boats and the houses and the cars and stuff like that. And I think our generation's a lot different where we have the want for the experiences instead of the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I think that that's I'm sorry about your house, that first of all, because it's a big deal and it does happen. But I do think it needs to be acknowledged that that's tough and it really influences the way that we think about the world.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's good to know that somebody else understands that experience because, you know, I never talk about it. And I never really thought about it as a very interesting thing until I got older and realized I was like, you know, I don't decorate my houses or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure.
When I make my music, I'm like, what are the bare elements that I can include to make this impactful? There's no reason for all like the glitz and the glamour and the pomp and circumstance as far as all that's concerned. Right. It's like, how can
not
I?
Not that
like,
that's a bad thing.
No. And it's like, and exactly. And it can
it's just
really
a different
wonderful.
Style, what you want.
Exactly. And so it's like, and I don't even think about it as like minimalism or anything. I'm just like, okay, how do I put myself, the figure that I rely on the most in this situation, at the center of my music and make that resonate with people? Like, I want people to listen to my music and feel like they can go out and do anything and face any challenge and overcome it.
Well, where did you get your name initially, the Frank Friday? Where that persona came from?
So Frank Friday, I was going by my actual name, Evan Tyler, for a while. And I was like, that sounds like not. Well, first of all, I'm like a writer and I don't want people looking at my rap music. That would be kind of awkward. But
yeah, you got to have the stage name, the persona.
Yeah, exactly.
Separate the two.
And also, I am super into Marvel Comics. I have like an encyclopedic knowledge of Marvel Comics. It's wild. And I was thinking about, you know, Golden and Silver Age comic book characters and how their names had a lot of alliteration. Think about Spider-Man, for example, Peter Parker, his boss, J. Jonah Jameson, like stuff like that. And I thought, well,
Frank Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Frank Friday. And so a big part of that was Frank Friday was me donning this other persona that was like my crime fighter. It was like the guy that I put on, my anti-hero, who's like going to go out there and kick some ass and like make things better in a way. And kind of contextualizing where my position was when I was entering the rap market, I guess, was that I was like, you know, there's not very much queerness in hip hop right now. There's not very much. There's and it was starting to get there. Like there was some small influences just barely beginning to crack.
It seems like there's a lot of masculinity and like testosterone in hip hop for the most part.
Exactly. And me, I have always been, maybe not always, when I was younger, I was like really conservative, but like when I got a little bit older, I just became like super like, I am a feminist ally and I'm like anti like colorism and I'm like, I'm anti-racist, like we're like just like fighting the power, but in a good way. And although there, I will say that there's lots of good ways to fight the power. Nobody should tell you how to do it. But anyway, but so with all of that, I was like, all right, this like hyper masculinity and this focus on the sexual exploits of men and all this bullshit
and materialistic things.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, all right, fuck all of that. That's not interesting to me. Like, I mean, it's fun and it's exciting to listen to, but it's like, but I want to go on stage and I want people to be like, dude, I don't know how to fucking take this guy, but he's really fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
And so Frank Friday was born.
Nice. Yeah, well, how many shows have you played? Because you've been around since like 2012, and you've performed places like Holland Project.
Yeah.
And where else have you performed at?
So I've played. So I've played all throughout this city. I can't even really like think about it right now. Actually, just pretty much like all of the bars that do shows out here, I've played. A few houses, like punk houses, which is always my favorite thing. I love to play house shows. Like a. If anybody's out there, I'd like to play more.
Yeah.
I've played some places in California, like the Red Museum in Sacramento, which is a really amazing venue that I hope more artists from our area will go to visit.
Mm-hmm.
I've played some places in Las Vegas. I have not broken into the New York City market yet, but I plan to.
Do you live in New York City?
Yes,
now?
I live in New York City now. I visit Reno every couple of months because I just can't get away.
Right. What are you doing out in New York? Are you working on stuff out there? And
so that actually gets to an interesting part of my story. So I think back in 2015, a year ago, I decided that I wanted to continue my higher education and kind of get a fresh start. You know, I love Reno, but I was like, you know, I don't want to get stagnant or anything. And so I thought, well, let me go off and get my master's degree. So I moved to Queens, which is a borough out there. I went to St. John's University to do my master's degree, which I just completed.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And so I kind of took a break from performing too much until sometime late last year. But so what I'm doing in New York City is I'm working and I'm continuing to write. I'm working on a fiction manuscript right now that I hope to complete by May. I wrote a book of poetry maybe in the fall.
And that's separate from the fiction manuscript? Or is that
That's separate from the fiction manuscript. It is actually semi-autobiographical. And just like focusing on writing and building my career, I run a small business out there in content marketing and and editing and things like that. So I wear a lot of hats. I've always tried to think about myself both as a creative and as a business person. I think that's important. Only because, you know, I'm not somebody who's like, you got to make so much money and blah, blah, blah. But I do think that you have to provide yourself with the tools to survive and to make sure that your creativity is given its proper due. So I always try to equip myself with those things.
Yeah, you got to be prepared.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, what do you I know that your main project of the Frank Friday had started here.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think of the hip hop scene here in Reno? I mean, because up until recently, I had no idea there was a hip hop scene in Reno. So what is your take on it?
Because I find that it is evolving in a really positive way. I want to talk a little bit about Lil Traffic, who I think is a really interesting artist and very proud of what he's doing, and Young Milk Crate and the various acts that are associated with him. Those young men have created, I won't say that they created the hip hop movement out here, but they created a pathway that was more inclusive, which I totally applaud. And there's always been a hip hop scene in Reno, though. And I think that we need to honor that. There are so many people that were opening doors and blazing trails, maybe not in the way that we all understand, but you know, when I decided to start making music, the first person that I was inspired by was Knowledge. She used to be in the band Knowledge Lives Forever. She was.
Oh,
in,
yeah.
Yeah. And she won like the Reno News and Reviews Best Rapper. Like,
yeah, I think Gia Torcaso from Whitney Meyer played with her.
Yeah. And she was killing it for years. And also another like queer person of color who was really, really knocking down doors for other people to participate, namely me. And, you know, a funny story is that I wrote a journalistic piece on Shari Smith that inspired me so much that I decided to go start rapping.
Nice.
And so that's like a funny like moment in history. So there's always been a hip hop scene in Reno. It's been very insular for a long time. Shari started to open up the market a little bit, and then I am not trying to toot my own horn here or anything, but I kind of tried to take what I learned from her, just like from doing that interview and like watching what she was doing. And I was like, well, I'm going to start performing at venues like the Holland Project, and I'm going to start playing at shows with various bands, not just hip hop people. I'm going to start just doing things with other people. And I was like, this will accomplish more than one thing. Not only will it give me visibility, but it will also invite these audiences that maybe have not been invested in or haven't felt welcome to participate in hip hop culture to finally say, well, here I am.
It crosses genres.
Exactly.
The Dank Jewel show, the last episode we had, I was talking to Davey, and he's like, oh yeah, we had little traffic at our show, and they're two very different styles of music. So that's great to combine it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and so, you know, that was always a priority of mine. I always, you know, and I did a few like hip hop only bills, but that was never something I really want. That was not how I wanted to position myself. I wanted to position myself. I mean, obviously the work that I make is very hip hop, although it's genre crossing. But as a performer, I wanted to be genre crossing. And so I wanted to make sure that my stage presence and everything was very influenced by punk music and like rock music. And I wanted also to have roots and ties in that world with the intention of showing people that the language of music and the literacy of music, whatever small like pigeons that we speak, whether it's a hip hop or whether it's like chord progressions and rock music or whatever, we are all unified by that experience of wanting to enjoy that moment together. And I found, and you know, there were times where it's like you're the one hip hop artist at a like punk show or something. You're like, okay, this is gonna be like kind of
fucking. You're like, no, I'm the token black guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Token queer black guy at the show.
Exactly.
But you want me to play? Okay.
But then, like, it's just like you gotta be like, but then you soldier up and you just do it, and then it turns out that people see something exciting and new. And obviously, we are now at a moment where people are coming to respect that in the scene, and.
But it's great to see a bunch of white people, like, you know, getting down at a fucking hip hop.
Yeah, exactly. And like, I won't say that like that's necessarily the priority, but I do want So here's the thing. From like just stepping back and thinking about this from maybe like a business perspective or something like that, or a political perspective, I don't necessarily know that hip hop needs to be legitimized by the institution of whiteness or anything like that. But there are a lot of benefits from having white participation in hip hop. There are. And I'm not saying that it should be a totally transactional relationship. But what I am saying is that we all have a lot to learn from each other, and we should respect that.
Yeah,
we have
culturally our differences. And socially.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We have our differences and we have our similarities, and I think it's important to share space to talk and to celebrate that where we can, because when we silo ourselves off from one another, we just create these cesspools of like anger and hatred and resentment that are so dangerous to the forward progression of society.
And it seems like that's been more prevalent this past couple of years too, just with the exposure and the fact that you can, like, you know, live broadcast at any time you want to, and just the amount of, you know, outlets that people have to say things nowadays. It's more accessible than it used to be.
Yeah, which, you know, I always think about this. I recently started a project called the Web Literacy Project that kind of focuses on bringing certain principles within the humanities to the digital realm, and helping people to understand that we need to think critically and read critically and consume media in a critical way, if only because we've been doing that. Technology has been outpacing our morality. It has been outpacing our understanding of the law, outpacing our understanding of our fellow man. And obviously, the results of that have been catastrophic already. Mm-hmm. And maybe I won't say much more about that. But we have a lot of work to do in terms of catching up. And we have to understand that art and literature and in psychology and the law and ethics are still very, very important to the fabric of our society. And when you let those things go and when you let literacy get sidelined, you have nothing but violence and confusion to stand in its place.
For sure. Yeah. And what do you think about how... In relating to like the music scene and the music industry and the amount of exposure and all the avenues that people can consume music and ingest music, I mean, what do you think about where it's all going? I mean, with like Bandcamp and SoundCloud and...
So I think that there is a process of democratization taking place in music. I think that's the general consensus. That's what's happening. I think that there is a resistance to that democratization by the music industry in general. They're just figuring out new ways to, and not everybody, but like the big players are trying to figure out ways to buy into that democratization and like kind of recage a beast that cannot be recaged. Mm-hmm. With that said, when I say that democratization is happening, I don't say that in the sense that it's all good or all perfect. It's not. Artists being able to put their work on Bandcamp, that's wonderful. But if there's no business model to support that, then they can't create art for a sustained period of time and people can very easily steal their music. I'm not necessarily somebody that's super, super crazy about money or things like that, but there are just so many pitfalls for musicians right now, especially independent ones, and even label artists who just end up in massive debt. There's so many pitfalls no matter which direction you go in right now. There's in my view a there's an opportunity for us to come together and start thinking about how we can implement technology effectively to create platforms where we are able to collect capital in a meaningful way, and where we are able to publish our music in a way that gets us actual exposure without putting us at risk. And one platform that I think people should look at right now is called Resonate. They're using blockchain technology to kind of remove that middleman.
What is that blockchain technology?
So blockchain technology, I am not sophisticated in my knowledge enough to really go into it. But people should look it up. But they use blockchain technology essentially to make it so that music is coded in such a way that when somebody purchases it, micropayments are distributed to the producer, to the writer, to the artist, and people like that, and it removes the administrative component in the middle that usually...
It's just fans giving the money to the artist.
It's a direct
directly.
Relationship between the fan and the artist.
And that's cool, and that seems like the direction that it is going.
Yeah.
With more fan involvement with the artists, like...
Yes, and you know, in some ways, that will eliminate a lot of jobs in the music industry, and I'm sorry for the people that will be cut out, but at the same time, the middleman aspect of what's happening in the music industry is so bloated that sometimes artists don't see any money at all, even if they produce huge platinum-selling records, and that's a problem. It's a problem for you to go out on tour to do all that work and to see none of your money because you signed your soul away not knowing what you were thinking. And I mean, think about this. Youth is still a very popular commodity in music. And if you think about it, a lot of people target very young, creative people who they know are desperate to change the circumstances of their lives. Boom, they sign that contract and they're never going to make a dollar in their lives, but they are going to produce a couple of hits. And that's unacceptable in my view.
Yeah, just all the companies making money off of their merchandising.
Slave labor.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And then it just turns into this thing, like you said, you're not really focused on the money necessarily. You're more focused on just your art and releasing your music and your fiction.
Agency. Agency, that's what it is. And so that's what I always, if I could encourage other artists to consider anything, anything at all. It's, you know, don't focus on making so much money. Like, it's like money. If you're looking to make a lot of money right away, music's probably not the way to go. Art is not the way to go. However, that said, it's so important to focus on maintaining your agency and making sure that you're not beholden to anybody. And so if there's any way that you can figure out how to do that while still making your art, do that. Go that route. Make sure that you answer to yourself financially, spiritually, politically, because at the end of the day, like, nobody's going to be standing over your grave frowning at you for the choices that you made. You're going to be the one that's going to be either happy or upset over how you decided to go about making your art.
Yeah, not making any kind of choices or decisions is that's your own fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what are you working on right now? Are you in the process of making another album or just making some new songs?
Yeah, so I've actually written quite a few new songs over the past year that I've been kind of gone. I released a new song with Zach Haley maybe in August. And then from there, I like sat down and got to writing. I'm hoping to release something, two things. One at the end of this first quarter of 2017 and then something in the summer. The first thing is kind of going to be just a bootleg tape, essentially, just beats that I'm jumping on and things that I've liked and kind of things that have contributed to my creative process. I haven't figured out a name for it. I've actually been trying to not name things before I finish them. And then in...
Untitled, like the Kendrick Lamar
style thing. Yeah, and then... but I'm very excited about that record because there are a lot of songs on there that... I've been excited to touch for a really, really long time, and I finally reached this place in my artistry where I feel like I can do them the justice that I always wanted to. And then...
do you produce your own?
I do produce some of my own, and I also work with producers. I think that there's nothing wrong with collaboration. I think it's super important. In fact, every single person I've collaborated with, I don't know if you know of T. Hay, is my favorite collaborator.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
My favorite collaborator I've worked with. You learn so much with them, and your abilities expand dramatically when you step outside of that self zone. So I definitely like to work with other people because I think we become greater than the sum of our parts. So yeah, that's like something that I'm working on. It's like, so this first thing is just like produced by various people that I've like kind of worked with throughout the years and just never got all around to releasing things. And then hopefully second quarter of this year, but maybe third or fourth, we'll see. I'm not going to make any promises right now. We're going to have Frank Friday album number 2, and it's going to be properly released because the first one, you know, it just was in development hell for so long, and I worked with so many different studios and did so many different things and like had management and then didn't and then did again.
Okay.
And it was like stupid. and then I finally was like, here's all these fucking songs. Enjoy.
Yeah.
And so next time around, I'm going to really give it the proper treatment. I think I'm in a much better place to do that now as well.
The proper polish and shine production quality and just releasing it like in that kind of way.
Exactly. Well, and probably knowing me, I will just release it at a show one of these nights. I'm just going to be like, I'm playing. And by the way, here's my new album.
Nice. That's going to be awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And you know what? I really appreciate you talking to me about your music and your experiences and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And coming down here. Before we go, is there anything else that you want to add?
Well, let me think about what I want to add.
A little cherry on top.
Yeah. So yes, this is the one thing that I will say just to all artists out there. Hey, never, ever, ever be afraid to look back and give game to new people or to young people. Always, always support young people making art. Don't be catty. Don't be old. Be cool and like really support people coming up, because something that I've seen in Reno and hopefully that I see elsewhere in the music industry is that when you contribute to the youth, they create a flourishing culture. So let's keep that up. Giving to young people is a radical act as well.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you very much, Frank Friday, for coming down and talking to me. This has been a lot of fun.
Hey, thank you. It was really great to join you today.
Automatic. EMT. Yeah. I've been kissing all the worlds and rolling with the boys. I'm not really sure when I'll regain control. really though, this is how it's always been. And if I slide it over, I'm sure I do it all again. Yeah, it's true, I'm a dog, I'm a tramp. You can see it in my threads, I ain't nothing but your fam. I'm just a boy in this fucked up world, getting fucked up with the captain and his fucked up girls. Got a good lean going on.
All right, well, there's my conversation with Frank Friday. Big thanks to Frank for coming out and talking to me about his music and just about himself in general. He's a really interesting guy to talk to, and you can check out all of his music on his Bandcamp and SoundCloud page. He's got a lot of stuff on SoundCloud, so be sure to listen to that. And, stay in touch with all of his new releases coming out this year on social media. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. I'd really appreciate it. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what Frank Friday comes out with later this year. Also, you can check out a music video for one of his songs that I posted on our website. It was done by White Opus Productions. So be sure to check that out. But until next time, this is Dave with All Independent Reno Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you.
It doesn't matter, gotta give it a try. Not sure how I'm gonna survive. How can I make it alive? Who do you turn to when you're dying inside? And your soul is in need of a guide.